Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Cedarville Stories podcast. I'm Mark Weinstein, and joining me today on the program is Dr. Dan Estes, Distinguished Professor of Old Testament, and he is a professor most students have had at Cedarville at one point in their education. By all accounts, Dr. Estes is a theologian, a scholar of the Old Testament, and the author of 5 books, although a 6th one is forthcoming. He is originally from New York, although he's lived in Ohio for the majority of his adult life, specifically in the Columbus area. When he's not teaching or on his knees praying for his students, Dr. Estes is spending time with his family or running, and we'll get into those topics today on the podcast. Dr. Estes earned his undergraduate degree in Bible and English from Cedarville University. He went on to receive a master's degree in Old Testament exegesis from Dallas Theological Seminary, and then a doctorate in biblical exegesis from the prestigious Cambridge University in the United Kingdom. There's a lot to talk about with Dr. Dan Estes, so let's go to my conversation on the Cedarville Stories podcast with Dr. Dan Estes. Welcome, Dan. It's good to have you in studio.
Well, it's great to be here, Mark.
So what I didn't mention much in the introduction is that you're also an avid runner, as you have competed in some marathons. In fact, I believe you've run in 7 marathons over a 12-year period of time, including Columbus Marathon, that qualified you to run in the 1996 Boston Marathon. Share with us, if you can, how your father instilled an interest and passion for you to run, because running doesn't sound like a lot of fun to me.
Yeah, my dad ran when he was in high school, and so as I was growing up, that was always in my mind. I ran in high school, did soccer in college here at Cedarville. Several years later, I just got thinking about the upcoming 100th Boston Marathon, and remember my dad, he had passed away by that time, and I thought, you know, that would be an interesting thing to go after. I'd never run anything at all close to a marathon. Uh-huh. I'd run like 5-mile races and things of that sort. But I started training and took about 1.5 years or so to train for it. And then when I woke up the morning of my qualifying race, it was 22 degrees for the Columbus Marathon. And so that I wasn't really counting on that. But I managed to hit the qualifying time and then ran the 100th Boston Marathon, which was just a wonderful historic event.
For our listeners, to qualify for the Boston Marathon, you have to finish in a qualifying race, which Columbus was, in 3 hours and 20 minutes. You finished in 3 hours and 16 minutes. Do you recall it?
I was cutting it close, and I was not in good condition when I got at the end of that race.
Right.
It was so cold. My body temperature had dropped. I was not a happy camper at the end of that, but recovered from it. And then running in Boston was just such a historic event, and it was one of my real highlights.
Yeah. Do you recall in the Columbus Marathon thinking you might not make the qualifying time as the race went longer and longer?
The last 3 miles were really hard, and I wasn't sure. It's one of those things where you just think, okay, do I really even want to finish this race?
Yeah.
But when I saw the finish line and I saw the clock there, I said, yes, I'm going to make it. And that was a real encouragement to be able to run all that distance and maybe be able to finish.
Absolutely. So let's go to the Boston Marathon. I assume you had family there to watch you.
I didn't.
Really?
No, I didn't have family for that one. I drove down from my wife's parents live in New Hampshire, and so I went and stayed with them overnight, and then I drove down to Boston and had to park about 1 mile away from the finish line, and then I took the bus out to the starting line. Well, I finished that race, and then I had to walk 1 mile back to find my car, and that was a long 1 mile walk. But it was, it was just part of the experience. It was really special.
So share the experience of running in arguably the most prestigious marathon, at least in the United States.
Well, there were actually 2 races going on at the same time. There was a race with about 10 runners at the start. Most of them were Kenyans or Ethiopians, and they were the only ones who had a prayer of winning. And then there were the rest of us, and we were running for our own personal best or some personal challenge that we had.
As I mentioned in the introduction, Dan, it's been 40 years since you began teaching here at Cedarville University. That's quite an accomplishment. What's it been like for you to teach students and see, Lord willing, spiritual growth in these students?
You know, Mark, that's one of the most gratifying things of a long-term ministry, whether it be at Cedarville or in a church or wherever it might be, you have a chance to see what God does over the long haul. We tend to be so focused in the present that sometimes we fail to see the larger dimensions of what God's doing, the trajectories that he has.
Yeah.
For me, when I see a student that I had 20 years ago bring his son or daughter to campus as a prospective student, sit in my class, and all of a sudden I get a sense, wow, I've seen how much growth that person has had, and they've taken the things that I taught and mm-hmm. others taught, and they've lived them out, and now here their son or daughter is about ready to start college. Getting second-generation students like that is just a wonderful joy, because it's just such a tangible demonstration of what God's doing over time.
How often do you get to see that? Is that more frequent now?
Yeah, just about every class I teach, I have children, former students.
I also learned that, you know, with the 40 years that you've been on faculty, you had the 4 years as an undergrad student, mm-hmm. so you've been here 44 years. I'm interested in knowing, how did you first learn of Cedarville?
I grew up in New York, and at that time, Cedarville was one of the six approved colleges for the General Association of Regular Baptist Churches,
okay.
and our church was part of that fellowship. And so I can remember Dr. Jeremiah coming and speaking at our church. He used to go out to churches all over to present the work of the college and just acquaint families with what Cedarville was doing. And I remember him speaking at our church, and we were kind of taken by this school we hadn't heard much about at all.
Okay.
And then my sister came here for a year, and so I knew a little bit about it through her. And then the Lord just kind of put things together and, in a surprising way, brought me here as a student, and I had just a wonderful experience.
Obviously, you've seen a lot of growth in our university, mm-hmm. a lot of change. How are students similar, spanning those decades?
You know, that's a question I often get asked, particularly by alumni who come back for their reunions. They say, well, you know, how have the students changed, or how's the college, it was college back then, how has the university changed? And what I often say to them is that on the surface, there are a lot of things that have changed. I mean, look at all the buildings.
Right.
You look at the size of the university now compared to what it was. When I was a student, we had about 1,000 students. Now we're 5,000.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of changes there. Don't look at those surface changes and think, oh, Cedarville has changed dramatically, because when you get under the surface, a lot of things, the most important things, haven't changed. Our commitment as a university mm-hmm. To the Lord, our commitment to daily chapel,
right.
to the Bible minor. The students who come here self-select, yes, they want to have excellent academic programs, but they say, we also want to have chapel. We want the Bible minor. We want the emphasis upon our spiritual formation. And so that hasn't changed a lot. That's one of the things I love about Cedarville, that the things that are really at the heart of the school have stayed constant over more than half a century that I've been involved with it.
How would you classify or characterize the students of today and their commitment to academic rigor in terms of spiritual commitment and desire to grow in their faith?
As I interact with the students, I see just a real passion for the Lord and for ministry. They want to serve him. They have a view of the world. There are a lot of really great traits of this up-and-coming generation that, for me, make me want to invest in them.
What are some of the things you see that really gets you excited about the future?
They want to do more than simply sit in church and have a comfortable life. They want to make a difference. They have grown up with the world at their fingertips.
Yeah.
They aren't just limited to their very small circle where they are geographically, but they're aware of things that are happening all over the world. And that translates into a vision for the world, a vision for ministry throughout the world. That's an exciting thing. Most of them aren't just looking for an easy, safe, tame life. They want to take risks for the Lord. They want to really thrive for him.
I hear in society that the young generation is a me generation, a self-centered kind of generation. But you're seeing, at least with our students, the opposite. You're seeing more of a outward-thinking service mentality to impact other people's lives with the gospel. Is that fair?
just about every generation has looked at the coming generation and said, oh, they're a me generation.
True.
I think that gets overblown a lot. I think that's just part of natural development. This group, they have a passion for the world that I think is very commendable. Now, do they have challenges? Yeah. I mean, the challenges that they have in many ways are different from the challenges that my generation had or right. generations in between. But every generation has its challenges and its opportunities.
Right.
And I'm excited about what this generation is going to do.
While we're talking about students, let's transition just a little bit. Because one thing I learned about you in preparation for today's podcast, and this is from people I talked with, alumni I talked with, alumni that I read some notes from, what meant a lot to them is that you regularly pray for your students. Now, I don't know if you pray for all your students or how you do that. How did you foster and develop and cultivate a spiritual worship of prayer?
You know, Mark, that goes back to just an amazing meeting I had with an old lady in my home church.
Mm-hmm.
I was back home. I think I was in seminary at that time. And I was home visiting my parents. And on the way to church one Sunday night, my mom said, Dan, how would you like to visit? And she mentioned the name of the woman after church tonight. Well, when mom asks a question like that, we all know it's really not a question. It's,
right.
This is an instruction what we're going to be doing. And I said, sure. I didn't really know her except I'd never had a word with her that I could recall. I knew who she was. I knew she was important to my mom. And so after church, we stopped over at her house. And she was probably 85 or 90 at that time.
Okay.
Quite frail. But as we were talking, she said, Dan, I want to show you something. And she walked me out to a hallway that she had with, and there was a large map of the world with pins sticking in all over it. I said, well, what are these pins about? She said, well, you see that pin right there at Dallas, Texas? That's you. I said, really? I said, this is my prayer map.
Wow.
I pray through this every day. I said, well, how long does it take you? She said, well, it takes about 3 hours to pray for each of those pins. And I was astonished. I said, well, that's amazing. She said, you need to realize, Dan, I can't do the things I used to do as far as ministry, but this is what I can do. And I pray regularly for you. And the Lord used that to plant a seed in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take it up right away. But a few years after that, I started thinking, now, who am I going to pray for on a regular basis? Not just you pray for the people who are having surgeries or who have lost things or you know, lost a job or whatever, but praying in a regular intercessory way for people. And I started small, and it has grown over the years. About 20 years ago, I said, you know, I need to pray regularly for my students. And so what I did the first day of class was invite them to write me a 2-page letter that just tell me about yourself. You know, what are the experiences that have shaped your life? What are your interests? What are your passions? What are your goals and dreams for the future? And I told them, no one else would ever see this letter. I would just read through it and pray for them on a regular basis. And so I started doing that. And then a few years after that, I thought, you know, how about if the days I pray for them, I just send them a quick email just telling them I'm praying for them.
Mm.
And that has just revolutionized my relationship with my students because given the opportunity to share about themselves, they can set the floor for the relationship that I'll have as I pastor them.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that I know because they've told me. And that enables us to have just a deeper relationship. And I can really pastor them, not just talk to them, but I can pastor them. And so many students have told me that, you know, just those little notes just encourage them. They say, I needed to hear just exactly that today. And I never know exactly what they're facing. I have a sense of the types of things they might be facing at a particular time of the semester. But God has used that in a really great way. And then I start enlarging it to my friends, people in my ABF, other people that I have known. And so I pray for them regularly. I think we all need to know that people are praying for us. And my prayer is that a number of the people that have been on the receiving end of my prayers will then start praying for others so they can pass that blessing along.
How many people would you say you're praying for right now?
You know, I'm not praying for everybody every day.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know, Mark. I spend a lot of time in prayer each day. I have a long commute, and much of that time is in prayer. I pray when I'm out walking and running. I'm praying when I'm working in the yard, praying when I'm shaving. I mean, this is a ministry that God's given me that is just, it just is woven throughout my life.
You know, praying for your students and praying for others obviously has an impact on them as you share with them that you're praying for them, but it also impacts you. Yeah. How has it impacted you personally and spiritually in your journey with Jesus?
God called us to shepherd the flock of God. When I was in the pastorate, that was what I was doing. And even though the Lord took me out of the pastorate, he didn't take the pastor out of me. Right. And so I try to be a pastoral teacher. I view my students not just as students in a class, people to inform, people to instruct, people to develop their skills. I want to teach to their hearts. This has helped me to become sensitive to who my students are and how I can minister to them as whole people. And I think in doing that, it has taught me a little bit more about the heart of the Good Shepherd, how he pastors me and cares for me. And I'm finding more and more I'm trying to do for my students what the Lord does for me as I relate to them and as I minister to them.
You've also, at some point, served as a pastor of a church in Columbus. Mm-hmm. How long were you pastoring at this church in Columbus and then balancing a full-time job here as well?
I was an associate pastor. I started at Clintonville Baptist Church in Columbus, and then the church moved up to Worthington. It's Linworth Baptist now. And I was there full-time for 6 years before I started teaching here.
Okay.
I did have a period of about 4.5 years where they needed some extra pastoral help, and so I helped out part-time about 15 hours a week. I did find, though, that that was too much. I was glad when that came to an end, but I still pastor there. I still teach a class and work in the music, and there many of the people still call me pastor when I relate to them. And so, you know, I'm not on the staff or anything like that, but I still, you know, have a pastoral care for people there.
Do you recall when you had that first sense that God was calling you into ministry, whether it's at a church or even here at Cedarville?
Well, it was, I grew up in a pastor's family, and so it was always out there, although my parents never, ever urged me toward the pastorate. But it was, I saw it in front of me every day. I was probably about 16 years old. I was working at a summer camp, and I had several people just independently came up to me and just said, you know, Dan, have you ever considered going into the ministry? When it happened the third or fourth time, it's like the Lord saying, Dan, you know, trying to get your attention here. And so when I started college, that I was fully expecting that to prepare for the ministry. Now, the only ministry I knew was the pastorate.
Sure.
And certainly when I was in college, I never would have thought that I would ever be able to teach like my esteemed teachers were teaching me. Yeah. I mean, it just seemed to be, you know, too far out there. And so that was not at all my ambition. I just thought, okay, I'm going to be in the pastorate, and started out as an associate pastor. And I thought, well, eventually I will probably become a senior pastor somewhere. But then the Lord surprised me by bringing me here.
When you were living in New York, you, it was before you were coming to Cedarville. In the back of your mind, was it because of potential ministry opportunities that you wanted to come to Cedarville to get that kind of formal education? Did that play a role in why you came and enrolled at Cedarville?
Yes, I was going to prepare for what I thought would be pastoral ministry. And so probably from the time I was 16, the only thing I was really looking at was going to a Christian college where I could study Bible and then go on to seminary and then go into the pastorate. That was kind of the plan that I had. It seemed like that's what you did in order to prepare for that kind of ministry.
In your profile on the Cedarville University website, a statement reads, "The Lord used numerous experiences at summer camps, church, college, and ministry to build into your life. And now, as a Bible professor, you consider it a privilege to do for others what so many of your mentors did for you. What are some ways older Christians invested in you And how are you paying it forward and investing in the lives of maybe your students, maybe your colleagues at Cedarville, maybe just people in general?
I remember the first day on my job at the church where my senior pastor just sat me down and he said, "Dan, I see my job as helping you to learn everything the Lord has taught me in my years of ministry. I want to teach that to you. I want to help you to develop your gifts, and then we'll see what God has for you." I've found over the years, I've been doing pretty much the same thing with my students. Every student has been uniquely gifted by God, and I need to teach them the things that God has taught me, teach them how to study God's word, teach them how to minister to others. But I also have to help them to grasp how God has made them special, what their gifts, what their interests are, what their passions are, where they can fit into God's ministry. Rather than saying, "Oh, you need to do it like this because this is what I did." And so trying to help them along like I was helped along. And then also just the ministry of encouragement. I had some wonderful encouragements all along the path. One man that was so precious to me was Dr. Jeremiah. I got to know him when I was a student, and he was very kind to me. And then when I came back on faculty, he was the chancellor. That time he was retired. But I can remember him saying, "Dan, let's go out for lunch. My treat." And he'd take me out to lunch, and he just would talk and share with me from his heart, from what things he'd learned in ministry. He was building them alive. He was mentoring me. It wasn't a formal discipleship or mentoring type of relationship. He just was coming alongside. He had many things he could do, but he chose to invest in me.
What did Dr. Jeremiah do that still is impacting you today?
You know, Dr. Jeremiah never stopped being a pastor. I think Dr. Murdoch, in his history of the of Cedarville, calls him the pastor president, and he really was. You know, from a distance, you know, you'd see him. He would be up on the stage, but you get up close to him, and he just had such a pastoral care. He was very interested in individuals. I always loved that from him.
Several months ago, I had Scott Mills on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Scott Mills is James T. Jeremiah's grandson. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Scott lived with Dr. Jeremiah when he was a student here. Mm. And what he told me, and this is a similarity I see in you, is Scott would come home to his grandfather's house and regularly see Dr. Jeremiah on his knees praying for people. Yeah. That seems like a modern day in Estes to me. And that's a great tribute. And so I commend you for that. And it's a great example for all of us who are listening to this podcast to take prayer seriously. It's it's easy to neglect it. How would you encourage me and others to start a meaningful prayer life?
When I teach my students about prayer, I have a day where I just talk about the practice of prayer. You know, we get into the theology of prayer. You know, we think, well, how does God answer our prayer? And are our prayers worth it like that? I think for a lot of us, we just need to understand, how can I fit prayer into my life? And I share with them some of the things that I've just shared with you, Mark. Just learning how to capture those minutes that could so easily be wasted. You know, you have to think about something when you're walking across campus or driving to campus. And so rather than, you know, listening to sports radio and feeling my brain cells die, I'd rather just, you know, pray and make it, you know, worth something that, you know, that can really be a help to people. It is a discipline, for sure. And like every discipline, you have to start small and you have to build it over time. It's like a muscle that has to be developed. I can remember as a high schooler, you know, every so often you hear somebody say, "Well, Martin Luther said, I've got so much to do today, I have to pray 3 hours before I get started." That's not a real positive way to get started in all of this when you're young. Start praying and then just say, "Well, now who else could I pray for?"
Yeah.
Or what else is needed there that I'm missing? And over time, it'll grow.
I think I grew up thinking prayer was something formal, it was rigid, but really I can pray as I'm walking across campus, as the Lord brings someone to mind, and I just have an attitude that leads me in that conversation with the Lord.
Right. You know, Mark, the prominent metaphor for the Christian life throughout the Bible is the walk.
Yeah.
It talks about how we walk with God. And when you walk with someone, you naturally have a conversation with that person.
Yeah.
And I view prayer as my side of the conversation. as I express my concerns to the Lord or pray for others. Now, there's also the listening side, letting God speak his truth, his encouragement, sometimes his, this isn't the right time yet, message to me. As we're walking, why not walk with God in prayer?
To be in the position to invest in the lives of others that you've done, education has been an important component. So as I mentioned earlier, you have a master's degree from Dallas Theological Seminary. Then you added a doctoral degree from the prestigious Cambridge University in the UK. How did your education in these institutions and Cedarville prepare you to serve in the ministry?
Well, Cedarville laid a good foundation. I had Dr. Lawler for Greek all 4 years I was here. He was a masterful Greek teacher and very, very demanding. But he taught me that God's word is worth our very best effort. I had other professors too that taught me other things about walking with the Lord and various ministry skills and certainly the content of the Bible. Dallas, those 4 years there were priceless. I am so grateful for that. We had wonderful faculty in every area. When I got into the ministry, I realized just how well they'd prepared me. To have that on top of the 4 years I'd had at Cedarville, I mean, I still had things I needed to learn, but I was just way ahead of the game with all of that preparation. And then at Cambridge, I hadn't anticipated the Lord would put me in a scholarly vocation. What Cambridge did so well was to teach me how to study, how to write, how to do the research that's necessary for scholarship, and had a wonderful mentor there, my doctoral supervisor. And then also the Lord happened to put us in a place where there was a marvelous church with godly people that really invested in our lives. And so during those years there, that was a real special experience, not just for me, but for our whole family.
And while at Cambridge, some of our most revered biblical scholars come from Cambridge University, mm-hmm. including D.A. Carson, whom you partnered with in a series when he published the book, Hear My Son, Teaching and Learning in Proverbs 1-9. How did you get connected with D.A. Carson?
I had seen him from a distance at theological conferences here before I started my doctoral work. And then when I was there, he happened to be on sabbatical in Cambridge when I was starting my doctoral program. And I walked into Tyndale House, which is just a wonderful biblical mm-hmm. research center. And there he was sitting in the tea room. And then I saw him at church and we became friends. And so then when he asked me to contribute to the New Studies in Biblical Theology series, he was just asking someone that, you know, who's a friend. And then over the years, we haven't gotten together often, but when we do have a chance to get together, he always has such an encouraging word for me. And he's been a real help to me over the years.
When you think back to your whole life mm-hmm. and the teachers who have been in front of you sharing their wisdom, sharing the truth, you marvel like, wow, look what the Lord has done and put in my footsteps.
Yeah.
How can I not be prepared to serve him? Do you get thoughts like that?
You know, there's the role of the teacher and there's also the role of the learner, and both are crucial for education to happen. I've been privileged to have some wonderful teachers in my life, but I also have to do my part in responding to what they're saying and valuing it and assimilating it. I have a chapter in Hear My Son about both of those roles, role of the teacher, then the role of the learner, because both are taught in Proverbs and both are crucial in our lives. I've often told my students that, you know, they are my greatest joy. You know, when I see them walking in the Lord, but they also hold the potential for being my greatest sorrow, because if they don't do their part in responding, then the huge disappointment of seeing all the teaching go for naught.
Yeah.
There's two sides to that.
I want to thank you for spending time with us on the podcast. We're about out of time. And before I close, I need to interject here that if you're a student and you want a Christ-centered education, you want to learn from biblical scholars, you want to learn whatever discipline you're interested in studying, I want to encourage you to visit Cedarville University's website at cedarville.edu. We'd love to share with you the many opportunities that await you if you enroll at Cedarville. And I have high regards for our Bible faculty. So visit cedarville.edu, and maybe Cedarville is the right place for you. You mentioned in the very beginning that your sixth book is forthcoming. What's the book, and when will it be released?
It's the second volume of my Psalms commentary.
Okay.
That was a two-volume work, a total of 10 years of research and writing on that. So it's been a major piece of my life. I've taught the Psalms ever since I started here.
Right.
And so this is really the fruit of all of that, plus a lot of additional study coming out in the New American Commentary series.
Okay. And when will it be released?
Probably early 2025.
Okay. So you might want to look for that in 2025. I'm sure it'll be worth picking up a copy. Dr. Dan Estes, I want to thank you for spending the last 30 minutes with us. It was a pleasure to talk with you about your life and your ministry and your faithfulness to the Lord. Thank you for joining me this week on the podcast.
I want to thank you for listening to the Cedarville Stories podcast brought to you by Cedarville University. You are encouraged to share, like, and review this podcast on your favorite podcast provider. And be sure to come back next week when we'll hear another Cedarville story for God's glory.